flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome, everybody out there. I'd like to move, first item is approval of minutes. I'd like to move to approve the minutes of the regular meeting of December 19th, 2011.
Second.
Any discussion? I just had a comment on page 2.1. Talking about APPR and stuff like that. The education commissioner has taken money back from schools because they haven't done what they're supposed to be doing.
Schenectady and Albany are...
There were five that I heard of. I can't remember the others.
The two locals, Schenectady and Albany, they're going after right now.
Okay. So we're all right.
So far.
Okay.
We filed all the proper paperwork at this point, yes.
Okay. I had one other thing. Nope, that's not an issue. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Our first public comment session is available now. Anybody in the audience have anything to say now? There'll be another public comment session at the end of the meeting. Thank you. Okay. Superintendent Administrative Reports. You're on, Mr. Kinney.
The only thing I have is the governor should be coming out with his tentative proposals. It still won't, when that information does come out, that'll be in the next couple of weeks, it still will not be definitive until the legislature approves it. So they'll be going back and forth, but at that point we'll have some tentative numbers on where our income, or I should say our state aid, will be next year. Other than that, who wants to go first?
I'll go, I guess. In the secondary, we're getting ready with the guidance counselors to start talking about course selections for the 2012-2013 school year. I asked them last year to keep some detailed notes on some things. Could we change the basic procedure for scheduling? We moved up the timeline, and we've done some things differently as we've gone through to plan for the upcoming school year. So we're starting that process. It seems very early, but hopefully we will have kids actually selecting their courses. Sometime by the end of March, we'll have that process complete, so we have an idea about enrollment numbers and start to break up how many sections of each course that we could offer. And hopefully the plan is, once we perfect this cycle, to start looking at actually having some of our older students the following year do their own enrollment online. Through SchoolTool, we already have all the pieces to do that, and opening it up so the students can go in to SchoolTool, request their courses, and that'll just expedite that generation of sections and numbers. The counselors are also right now in the process of fine-tuning that curriculum handbook so that our course descriptions are up to date. Any related exams are up to date because some of those things are changing, so that when we have those conversations and counselors are pushing into classrooms to talk about scheduling, that we can provide them with a curriculum handbook that's updated as well. So we've started that process. One thing that was happened after submission of the board agenda was we recently hosted on the 3rd, our first day back to vacation, through the efforts of the American Legion, and Mr. Lipitsky had a huge role in hosting the oratorical contest. One of our students placed second. Michael Giordano will be the alternate for the region. We did have five schools here participating. It was nice to have it in our home school, and I think that helped generate some interest. Mr. Lipitsky said it was the most students Cambridge has ever had participate in that event. So, although it didn't make it onto my agenda, I just wanted to recognize him for his efforts.
How does that work? Is there a certain topic the kids have to talk
There's about? A topic. They prepare a speech. They can use no note cards. It's all completely memorized. I know Michael Giordano has done it in the past and done pretty well, but this is his strongest showing. We had some other Cambridge students do quite well. And Mr. Lipitsky was excited because none of them were seniors, so that promises for another crop next year.
Okay, excuse me, can we send congratulation letters to those kids, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Talent Unlimited Literary Arts Journal, Mr. Harrington brought several pieces of work over. There were 195 works submitted by area schools. We had, from Cambridge, 11 pieces selected, which is pretty notable because only 50 pieces overall were selected. The students that I listed, Leah Ashton-Vacine, Sarah Barr, Lexi DiCarlo, Caitlin Fitzgerald, Clayton Harrington had two pieces, Thomas Hemmerling had two pieces, Hannah McGuire had two, and Georgiana Moses also had a piece selected. The fact that Cambridge made up about a third of the kids representing the pieces in the entire area, I thought was noteworthy not only for our kids but also for Mr. Harrington as their teacher and also bringing all the work over and setting it up. He was very excited about the number of pieces that were selected from our students. So I thought that was definitely worth noting.
Those letters have already
been mailed.
Okay, good.
And that's all I have.
In my board report, I included the most recent memo from State Ed regarding testing for ELA and math grades 3 through 8. So those are updates for board members' calendars. I also informed you that our second benchmark for reading assessments is taking place right now. So kids are being pulled out briefly for their DIMAL assessments. And the one thing I wanted to share, Mary Ledline, who is a big piece, as well as the rest of the CFA with Operation Santa Claus here, gave me some numbers that our Operation Santa Claus provided gifts and food and clothing for 151 children, 46 families. She also cited that 11 local businesses and churches donated, got involved, as well as our local scouting organizations. People walked out of here with bags and bags and bags, and it was a very generous, wonderful effort, so I wanted to share that as well.
All right. The treasurer's report for December is pretty much uneventful. The only thing really worth noting is that our December state receipts were received in full. Often, if there's any ever a threat of caught, which is in the year. Also, it's not reflected because it came in January, but we did receive our STAR in full, because last year they shorted us about $11,000. If there's no questions.
Is this a normal drop in our bank account? 1.2 mil, is that a normal thing for December?
Right. The taxes have stopped, and in December you have your serial bond payments. So that it's...
It's not distressing to you,
right,
it's not
then,
distressing to me.
No, we'll start to pick back up. We'll have a couple slow months. We'll pick back up in March. And then the state aid payments should really start flowing then. And get us through the summer. At the last board meeting, we were discussing the age income exemption. And I was able to obtain some information regarding it. It's part of the addendum. Currently, Cambridge is on a sliding scale with a base of $12,025 at 50%. $17,725 with a 20% exemption. We currently have 86 exemptions with an equalized value of $3,995,383. If we were to go in line with the county, which is a sliding scale with a $20,000 base at 50%, up to $28,400 at 5%, it would increase the exemptions to 161. With an equalized value of $8,678,070. So essentially we would be redistributing $4.6 million in equalized value to the other taxpayers. I found that a little bit alarming, so started looking into it, and I'm recommending a compromise where we go in line with neighboring schools, where we go from a sliding scale of 16,000 base at 50%. 24,405%. That would increase the exemptions to 140 exemptions, equalized value of $6,724,000, where you're redistributing $2.7 million. The tax dollar shift is currently the savings, as we are, is $53,272. We push that up to $89,662. So we'd be shifting, the tax burden shift would be $36,390.
Over how many properties?
I don't know the full number of properties.
What would that be per household?
You can't, really can't.
I know you can't. I mean, you've got a rough figure.
No, I really don't, because there's so many.
Bill's still trying to get us some information from the Office of Real Property Services in Washington County, so we should be able to have that. We still have to have the public hearing, which we'll schedule for 6:30 before the next board meeting, which again is the second Monday of the month. But at that time, we should be able to have, February 13th. But we should be able to have some more information like that, hopefully. It's difficult to find out exactly what it means to each individual because it will depend on what their assessed valuation is.
So I don't know if we can fine-tune it to that extent.
But we need something. We can't just throw it out there because people are going to ask, what is it going to do to me? And I can't just go, I have no idea. Right. We should be able, I think we have to tell them something if we're going to vote for this.
It depends. I don't know how it's broken down at the county level, but we can try to see if we can get that information.
Okay.
It has to be in place for the 2012 rolls by March 1st. If you choose to go afterwards, push it off a year. So, I mean, you can do it, but if you do it after March 1st, it wouldn't be effective for another year.
I really think we should do our best to try to do it this year.
It's a tough year.
Yeah.
A tough couple of years.
Right. I'll try and get whatever information I can. I just don't know how much information they can obtain. You can count the number of parcels.
Right. I think we should do the best we can as soon as we can. Because what we're doing essentially is taking the taxes paid by a very small number of our most needy fixed income, usually
right.
Elderly people. We're taking some of that burden away from them and spreading that out among a much larger base of people who are arguably a little better off than a fixed income senior. So I think the sooner we do it, the better. Then we'll figure out the numbers and we can say, look, this is what we did this year. Maybe even revisit it again next year. But
right.
I think this seems like something that...
This information came in just today.
Right, it did,
so
yeah.
We weren't able to get more from Bill, but we will definitely get in touch with
him. In a month, we'll have more to work with.
I would hope to, we can get on the phone to them tomorrow.
Right, and I haven't heard back from Rensselaer County. They're just coming out of their very busy time because their bills are going out. So they said, I'll get to you as soon as I can. Washington County got back to as soon as Rensselaer County. So there's also that little piece of the pie, too.
Is there anybody up here that thinks this is not something we should pursue?
No, I think it's definitely not.
All right, then I'll continue with it.
Fine, thank you.
There's also just a little more informational thing. It shows the other school districts that I attached with it. Some information has come in regarding the tax levy limit calculation. The first thing was the tax-based growth factor they released them. Came in at 1.005. I also printed out some neighboring counties and other areas just for informational purposes. We had the bond sale, that was another piece of information that was holding things up. On January 4th, we had three bids that came in rather favorably, and the winner was a Raymond James with a 2.77%. We were estimating it to come in at 2.9%. So it was a little better than expected. These numbers still have to be, I'd like to have them audited by our independent auditor. But with the changes in the debt service, what we've learned since, I think it was October that I presented this, the TRS and DRS rates are out right now. And again, this hasn't been audited, but we're going to have maybe 3.53%. We'd be allowed to increase the limit tax levy, which is a $260,859 increase.
So, based on what most people right now understand about the new law, they think we're limited at 2%.
Correct.
But in actuality, we're limited by the law
at 3.53. Tentatively.
Just getting that out there.
It makes no sense to us up here either, folks.
The 2% is just one piece of the formula, an allowable growth factor. Mm-hmm. But then there's exemptions, plus and minuses that are taken into account, so that ultimately we could use staying at the 2% and not exceeding it, still be allowed to go out with a 3.53 tax levy.
Could you explain that one more time?
Shouldn't be a question. Well, okay. Is there a simple way you can represent it to the public?
Because of the exemptions that they allow,
For example, like?
The local debt, your local debt service, that's the big one. Anything over a 2% increase in the ERS or TRS calculation, retirement contributions, you can deduct those. So, or actually add those into it, not deduct them.
Let me explain that part of it, because you guys say it so fast.
Retirement.
Well, the state tells us what we have to contribute to the teacher's retirement and an employee retirement system. They tell us.
Okay.
So they said, well, you know, we're going to limit you to 2%, but for that thing, anything we tell you over 2%, which they always go over 2%, almost always, we're going to let you just include that in the levy.
Okay.
And we're going to give you the unenviable task of then explaining that to your citizens, why they think they're getting a 2%, and we're actually mandating that you go higher than 2%. At the same time. So I'm a little frustrated by this, because I think the state could have done a better job explaining this to the citizens. But politically, it was very expedient to say, hey, everybody, we're capping you at 2%. And it leaves it to us to now fight to get, you know, our little 2%, which isn't even going to be a 2%.
So we're glad you're here to hear that.
Yeah.
Because you should be spreading it to your fellow citizens out there that 2% is not
2%. That's not really
2%. No, it isn't.
That's because of
I mean, we may end up with a 2% increase, but we are allowed to go 3.53 before we hit this magic 60% wall.
Right. But see, politically, people are going to go, oh, they're greedy. They're going over 2% because they can.
Because they can.
But this is just to cover stuff that's imposed on us by the state. This isn't something we can say, let's lower our contribution to the teacher retirements. No.
Can't.
We don't have to. And on top of that, we have to put it onto the 2%. And obviously our goal, we're going to try to get under what our levy limit is. We're going to do our best, but this is just not going to sound good to people who have their heart set on a 2% tax cap, and there's no such thing. There's a 2% levy limit mitigated by various, mandate relief things and exceptions that the state just doesn't bother explaining.
There could come a year where we can't maybe hit that 2%. Because now next year, I'm going to take this number, and when you have debt service coming on and going off, we could actually, they did a survey around the various schools. Most of the schools could go over 2%, but one of the schools could only go 1.7, even with a 2% growth, just because of the way the numbers flow. So you could say, well, we'll stay at 2, but you could actually harm yourself in the future by saying, oh, now we can't even do 1. Now what are we going to do?
You can't do one maybe next year.
The debt service is the big, because debt service will come on, it's a moving number. And right now, because of our $8 million project, we're going to be taking on new debt. So this year it's a little bit higher. But next year we won't be taking on any new debt, so we could actually fall below. And it's all timing, too.
Well, part of the problem is from the beginning they've said it's a property tax cap. It's not. It's a levy limitation. And even when they try to explain it, they can't. You know, when it got down to what the exemptions and stuff were, they still had no clue down at the state what they were talking about. As a matter of fact, Stillwater's in a real deep hole because they have pilots, which are payment in lieu of taxes to have economic growth. And those are elimination or exclusions, but you don't add them back in. So they're excluding theirs, and I talked to Stan just the other day, and he said they're going to look at about 12 or 13% because their pilot cannot be counted, which is going to kill them, absolutely kill them. There's no way you're going to get that passed, not in this day and age when everybody hears 2%.
Can you explain the difference between a tax levy and a tax cap to everyone?
The tax levy is the amount of money that we can raise locally to pay for the local share of the education. The tax cap, I have no idea, because that's something that they came up with that down at the state,
well,
and they can't.
I think when people hear tax cap, you're thinking as a taxpayer, you're thinking, here's what my taxes are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear, like even in previous years, you hear our taxes are going to go up 1.8%, you're thinking my taxes are going to go up 1.8%. But what we're actually doing, we as board members now, is we don't know individual tax rates because they're adjusted differently for different towns.
Right.
And now we're doing, you know, reshuffling with what we were just talking about a bit ago. But what we do set is how much money we need to levy on the district, how much money we need to collect. So we're told how much we can collect and how much that can go up, but it has nothing to do with what's going to end up on individual people's taxes.
And if you look at the tax levy, if you look at the tax levy as a piece of pie or a pie, we have 8 townships. Each township is considered a piece of that pie. So depending on how big that piece is, it will also fluctuate as to how much the tax rate is in that particular township. We have to basically, the board has to adopt a budget by April. We vote on it in May. The people can still grieve their assessments until June 1st. We can't set the tax rate, technically, until after the equalization rates have been accepted down at the state, which is usually mid-August. So we're playing with a budget now that we won't know for another 6 months what it's going to be actually to the individuals.
Other than that, it's simple.
Yeah.
But I got to send you visual aids for us lay people, like a pie or...
I've heard this explained three times at least, twice by Beth, once by someone up in Lake George a couple weeks ago in a meeting, and it's still, I mean, I understand how it's done, it makes no sense to me, okay? It makes very little sense.
Actually, there are 8 different parts to the construct of the actual, what the tax levy is going to be. And it's very, very complicated, Barbara, and I'm sure that Vince will do an excellent job on it. It's out to meet with the community and just over some of this stuff, but it is complicated. Like Dr. Wolski said, I've been through it 3 times and I couldn't tell you all the steps. And Beth has tried her best to make us all aware up here of what's going on.
So in other words, if say you paid $1,000 for school tax, let's say it's to one person last year, now that's not going to go up $20 or $200, you don't have any idea.
We haven't gotten any state aid figures yet.
It's way too early.
It's not that we haven't talked about the budget. We have, but we just have not been able to sit down and formulate anything that we can put in print, let's say, at this point. Because
it's a shot in the dark until we find out what the governor's going to propose giving us in state aid. So, and the hardest thing with all of this is, what Howard was saying, it's 8 pieces. There's actually 8 assessed valuations, mm-hmm. 8 equalization rates, the potential of 8 what they call 550 or 520s that would be a variable adjustment from the year before. So there's 24 variables already. Then we have the library and our levy. So there's 26 different variables before we can set the tax rate in August. And that's the hardest thing because if all of a sudden the assessed valuation in a township changes, that piece of the pie is going to change. So if that piece of the pie grows, then all the other ones become a little smaller. So the others will have a decrease while that one will go up. And that's the hardest thing for anybody to understand. 8 pieces of pie, we have basically 3 that are about 30% each. And then the other 5 constitute 10% of the district. So there's really White Creek, Jackson, and Cambridge that are the 90% of the district. And everything else, whatever happens in those districts basically will drive what happens in the entire other pieces of the pie. And that's the hardest thing to understand. I will try. I tried the first year to explain that. I had an overhead and showed everybody how you would change things, and I'll try it again.
We will continue to hear every month from Beth and Vince, and we will have budget workshops, and we will try and go through this every single meeting. We talked about it back in September. I suggested we talk about this every single meeting to try and get it out to the public that 2% doesn't mean 2%. We really don't know at this point. As Vince just said, there's too many variables. We will do our best to let you know what's happening as it happens.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, just one last thing. A couple of years ago, I contacted a Bidger Energy. It's a company that goes out and solicits bids for energy suppliers, and they came in today with pricing. We're going to be moving from Hudson Energy to this Energy Tech, but we should see over $3,600 on top of the savings that we've been seeing in the past by going up with these independent suppliers for our energy sources. But I know that there's no savings.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you very much. Anything else from administrators?
Nothing else.
Okay. BOE reports. Colleen.
I don't really have anything.
I want to report on two committees and let you guys know about an event that's coming up in February that's kind of school related. The two committee meetings we had were the Energy Savings and Conservation Committee, and I don't know if Tom is going to talk more about the building side of this because we had a joint meeting with the building committee, but from our side, what we've been doing is implementing our energy savings contract where we're considering hiring a contractor to make substantial, huge energy improvements to the school in lieu and paying for those improvements with some of the energy savings in the future. So that's something we're working on. We'll have more information on that specifically, but we were filled in on the audit they're doing right now. They're wrapping that up. They're on schedule. It's looking good. And we're kind of working that into the building.
Yeah, if I could tag team with Paul, the building proposition, the $8 million project is going along. I think it's going along quite well. The plans will be delayed because of the energy audit. Yep. And we are going to have another joint meeting end of January.
January 31st.
So we will have all the information to discuss in public at the February meeting.
There will be a presentation at the February board meeting.
Yep, and then we will vote yes or no on the contract, and that will determine what happens with the building project.
Okay, the other one was a shared decision-making committee, which Lillian and I are not officially members of, but we do, our role is to collaborate with them, and they basically represent the constituencies from all over the school. The elementary school, secondary school, parents, students, teachers, administrators, and they get to choose what they want to work on to improve things in the district. And we've been talking about it for several weeks, and where they are right now is a minor immediate improvement they'd like to do is to expand the school newspaper and include also a school newspaper in the elementary area from 3rd to 6th grade. So that's something that's being discussed. Again, that's not something that's going to happen. That's what they're looking at right now as wanting to happen. We're also talking about maybe making that content available electronically. The more long-term issue that they're looking at and discussing, and this is much more in the secondary level, is just working with all the constituencies on bullying awareness and improving bullying. The various constituencies feel that we've done quite a bit already, and many of those things have worked. Some have been more effective than others, but they want to continue doing that as a group. So we're going to hear more proposals from them as that moves on. And that fits nicely in what we're doing as a board, too, or trying to do. Those were the committee reports. On February 4th, which is a Saturday, we're going to be hosting the first annual Cambridge Hypothermic Hoedown, which is a fundraiser. This year will directly benefit the students that are going on the science field trip to Costa Rica. If it's done in the future, it'll benefit basically unfunded initiatives for young people in Cambridge. But what it is going to be an obstacle race. It's going to be a fitness-based fundraiser where we have a big race through the woods behind the school, through the swamps, through the streams, over obstacles, under obstacles, through obstacles. And one of the obstacles, I think, is going to be having to eat an ice cream cone in the cold weather before you can proceed, or a bowl of spicy chili. We're still working that out. But you get the idea. It's meant to be fun, and it's meant to be fitness-based. Along with that is going to be an expo of other vendors that are going to be selling chili and food. We're hoping to get music if we can do the logistics of having people playing live music in what may turn out to be winter, if winter shows up by then. But so that's February 4th, Hypothermic Hoedown. We're looking forward to everybody. There's going to be something for everybody if you choose not to do the race, but there'll be a kid version of the race, a middle version of the race, which will be about 2 miles long, and then a double lap of the race for the group people with real fortitude and people who like seconds on their ice creams and or chili. That'll be a 4 mile race. So if you have any questions, contact me or Christine Hoffer on that one.
Thank you. Okay, let me just continue with the building committee, and then I'll give it over to Howard. One of the biggest problems was the entryway to the school, and I think that's been resolved to your satisfaction, although I'm still pouting because my plan got bypassed, but that's okay. And Paul and I have yet to get together. The holiday sort of broke things up, but we will be getting together on board evaluations. We have examples from all over the country, so we will come up with something for you folks to look at and approve or disapprove. And that will be at the next, hopefully the next meeting. If not the next meeting comes up pretty soon. It might not be till March, but we'll have it done to be used in April, by April at the latest. Howard.
First of all, I'd like to congratulate Doug Luke. He's obviously not here tonight, but he's Coach of the Year for the D's, and I think that's a wonderful honor for him. We also have the two newspapers represented here, actually for the Eagle and Zeke over there for the Bennington Banner. And both of them have contributed some terrific articles on behalf of this school. And I really would like to thank you very much for being so positive in doing these things for the kids, because it means a lot to them, for sure, and it certainly means a lot to the school. I'm glad to hear that they're thinking about expanding the high school or the newspaper at Cambridge, because 2 years ago we had Ken Gottrie come in and do a special presentation about the history of the Cambridge Indians, which is the school newspaper, and the Orange and Black Review. And I think it's a wonderful medium for kids to be able to express some of their ideas, and I hope that this gets off the ground and we have a great turnout of kids who want to contribute to that. One of the concerns that I have, and I've been concerned about this for a while, is the amount of texting that kids are doing on their own. Some of these kids are spending 6 or 8 hours texting messages and playing on these video games, and I've read a lot of studies. One of them was published in February of 2011 at Harvard. It's a 46-page treatise that I think everybody should read, because scientists and medical doctors there are very concerned about the way kids are learning, especially younger kids, whose brains are literally being rewired so that they are living literally in a world of virtual reality, and they're not being encouraged to think for themselves and work collaboratively. And I think any programs that we do, we should be conscious of this fact. And I think it's especially important for parents to be very careful about how much time the kids are spending on these things, because it certainly is a great way of keeping kids engaged and keeping them out of your hair. But at the same time, a lot of kids are spending 6 minutes on YouTube and writing a term paper, whereas they're not reading their books anymore. And this may be something we all have to deal with down the road. Maybe it's something we can't cope with. I don't know. But just the other day, it was just a typical example. I went to the dentist's office over in Greenwich with my wife, who had to have a filling filled in or something, and in came 5 or 6 mothers from the local area with their teenage daughters, 12 or 13 years old. And none of them knew each other, but they all sat at different corners of the room, and I had to nudge Patty, because within the second they sat down, every one of them was doing this. And it's pretty scary. It is, if you think about it. You know, so when I do a summer science program, I don't allow any of that stuff. I don't allow it at all. I want the kids to be able to look at their surroundings. I want them to be aware of what's going on and not be entertained by something that's so inhuman, I suppose.
Okay. Retired excellent teacher has, I think we have to respect those comments quite a bit. Okay, new business. I'd like to recommend that we consider approval of the consent agendas as listed in consent agenda for personnel and the consent agenda for new business.
Second.
Second from Paul. Any discussions? It's pretty slim this time. No discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed. Move approval to recommend the board approve the following resolution to approve change order 2-03 for the Excel project in the amount of $22,204 with General Mechanical Systems Incorporated for the replacement of the hot water tank and to repair the boiler.
Second
from Howard. Any discussion? The work is being done?
Yep. It's completed already, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It was over the break that they did a lot of it. It was a contingency money, and we would have had to pay dollar for dollar. dollar, and you said that's usually Excel, was able, the architect, to show us that.
Yep.
Because it was part of our 5-year plan. That just makes sense.
Yep. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No opposed. Before I read the second, just what are we doing here with this item C?
Oh, this is what they had to do last year. It's basically the...
The lead agency, we declare ourselves...
No, C, the employment.
Employment hours.
It's Kate and you.
You have to report the...
Oh,
the treasurer and...
It's a civil service requirement.
We have to do it on an annual basis now. It's basically, it started, I don't know if you remember when they had the lawyers that were getting paid and the ERS as well. So now what they want to try to do is make sure that those two positions, because most of the time those positions are same individual doing multiple jobs. Mm-hmm. So they want to make sure that we're not claiming them twice, so we have to report how many hours they work.
Okay, but if I read this, there's nothing, it says we'll report the following days, and there's nothing there.
It's in the...
Yeah, that's the resolution.
Yeah, but I think it's in here.
It's in here on page 5-3. So I just add that, amend that to my order, and what
that,
I read?
That would be the attachment, yeah.
Okay.
Because that's what has to be submitted to the retirement system.
Okay. Then I move the board approve the following resolution. Be it resolved that the Cambridge Central School District hereby establishes the following as standard work days for the elected and appointed officials, which I will describe in a minute, and will report the following days work to the New York State and local employees retirement system based on the timekeeping system records or the record of activities maintained and submitted by these officials to the clerk of this body. And they specifically involve the district clerk at 6-hour standard work day and the district treasurer at 7.5-hour standard work day. And half second from Howard. Any further discussion or questions? Okay, well, I'll ask the same question next year. Okay.
All no problem. This is only the second time they've ever asked.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
None opposed. Okay. We have an addendum. Item D. And if Beth, you can explain this, and then somebody explain what's happening.
What we did when we had the original building project, for what it was, the $17 million, we had to do what they call a SECR report. SECR report. Now that it was the $8,037,000, the board just has to do the same thing for the $8,037,000. And it basically says that we're not going to disturb the environment. No, there will be no impact.
It's a negative declaration.
Right.
And we have to declare ourselves the lead agency.
Okay.
The two-step process.
Without boring everybody to death reading this whole thing, any suggestions? Or
I don't think he needs to read the whole thing, dude.
No, I would just say that we...
In the second paragraph, it talks about the New York State Environmental Quality Review Act. That's SECRA. So that's what we're talking about.
And this
about.
Is available to the public if anybody wants to see it.
Yep, it's actually in the addendum. So,
that's what they call a type 2.
So I don't think you have to.
I don't have to.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I move we approve item D, which is approval of a resolution regarding the SECRA. Second from Howard.
Vince, when will the Conservation Department take a look at this?
When it's submitted to SED as part of the entire project.
What's that time frame, roughly?
Because we're having the meeting next week or next month about the energy performance contract, we won't be submitting them to SED until the following week, or probably the week of the 13th. Mm-hmm. And then probably within the next 2-3 months at the most. This is a very short period of time.
Yeah.
It used to be 5 months minimum, mm-hmm. and they're talking now 3 months maximum.
That's good.
I think the architect was originally talking about the 18th or somewhere in there to submit them in because
submission.
Of the energy audit moving up. Because one impacts today. Mm-hmm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And none opposed. Public comment session number 2, Barbara.
I have a comment. I appreciate what you said about the texting, and I was just wondering what you're talking about. Honey, if you said that, we have learned to educate parents, teachers, and students about the bullying issue.
Barbara, it's a very delicate balance. I'll give you a good example, okay, of this that I'm personally aware of because I have two grandchildren in school. Both of them are very well. But their parents are very astute to these kinds of situations. And Andy, for example, is in the eighth grade. He did the 7X class last year, got 100 in it. And he's taking earth science readings this year as an eighth grader, and he's blowing that one away. But Andy does a lot of homework away from the texting stuff. But at the same time, his parents allow him to have certain amounts of time on the games and on the texting. And I think it's a real huge responsibility of parents to be able to take this on. But they have to understand the seriousness of what can happen if a kid gets addicted to these things. And basically, that's what it is. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. That's the way it is.
And I know the school has taken on huge responsibilities.
They do.
That
the school has.
Be taught at home, but I was just wondering, just while you're mentioning it, so some way down the road, we can incorporate that mm-hmm. into.
So a good suggestion.
Here's an, Howard said delicate balance, and he was talking about the home life. We also, as educators, have a delicate balance in the sense that, yes, we don't want kids to spend their days in front of a screen, but we do have to prepare them for college where they're going to be expected. Most colleges now, you walk in there with a laptop and you do everything on the laptop. Your research is all web-based, or heavily web-based. Your communication is heavily web-based and it's computer-based. So, you know, I think we're keenly aware, but we also have to be careful not to vilify something that really may be part of their lives.
It seems like colleges have accepted the fact that books are on their way out. New libraries for colleges are smaller than the old libraries that we're replacing, physically smaller. They don't have as many books. A place like Stanford, who's one of the more recent ones to do this, is not a bad institution by any means, and they don't need as many books. So we're headed there. I'm making a differentiation between this and reading a book here on a Kindle or an iPad. I think there's a difference. And Howard and I are going to have this argument after I read all of his articles, and that's fine. We will do that out of the public limelight. But I think just this conversation tonight, I think we'll put a bug in everybody's ear in the administration, and yes, we're going to be technically astute as much as we can, but this is not technically astute.
No, I don't know if there are any rules or regulations about cell phones in school and tech.
Yes, there are.
Cell phone and texting and BlackBerry.
They're supposed to be. We had this discussion with Tammy 2 months ago, and she's frustrated with the difficulty in enforcing it. Passed several years ago. No cell phones in school. Straightforward. Then she is, and Kyle are tasked with enforcing it. Colleen, I don't think, has the problem in the younger kids so much. But the junior high and the high school kids, yeah, they're a pain in the neck with it. And they will do everything they can. I've seen kids in my office texting their friends, telling, what are you telling your friend? That I'm in the vet's office. That's important. It is. It's a very bad habit. I think the addiction term is not out of line. It's just a question of balancing these two needs.
But I think it goes beyond that a little bit, and that being that a lot of kids who are 11, 12, 13 years old, whose brains are not really formed very well yet, can literally suffer some damage if they're habituated to these things. And I can only point out to Tom, I think my daughter would disagree with what he's saying because she did a 3-year postdoc at Stanford. And believe me, she's used a lot of books out there. And I can guarantee you, if you do a little bit of reading, you'll find that in many colleges who have decided that they would take on a iPod thrust for all their classes have dropped those things now because there are so many drawbacks to them. They're fine to teach with, but there are all kinds of things, such as the cost of these things in terms of all the things that need to be updated, the breakage on them, and we're suffering that kind of stuff here at Cambridge. You know, some of our machines are being broken by the kids. So
this is the discussion we will be having as a board, and it'll be ongoing.
Certainly will.
And it will be ongoing. I guarantee you that. Any other questions, comments from you folks out there? Okay, thank you. I think we're done. I move we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
None opposed.
Wow.
Wow. What happened? Did we have a meeting?
3 weeks ago.
Your homework was,
this was a short period between. The next one's going to be 4 months. Or weeks.
We move January and February's meeting up a week.
Up a week?
Yeah.
From the fourth week?
No, we moved it from, we usually have the school
the
meeting
yep.
on the 16th, and we
yep.
moved it up to the 9th.
Right. Well, the only reason we did that is because the same thing happened in the next one.
I know. But the town board has a meeting. That is something that I can agree on. And I would like it to not be.
Quite frankly, I'm going to try to push next year to put them back on Tuesday night. It makes life much easier not having it coming off on the weekend. So we all always met on a Tuesday night until the end got on the board. Wanted to be Monday nights. The first year we met were Tuesdays, and he couldn't make it, and now we moved him to Mondays, and we're still the same time. So I would like to get to the point where that would be a suggestion.
Just not to move him up to the
oh, yeah.
previous
good,
week,
good.
Even if you had to move it to Monday for
well,
one
if
week.
Moved it to Tuesday,
for Tuesday.
Tuesday, that should be.
Well, yeah, but
yeah,
I can work on that.
Okay.
Fine. On board, you don't work on it. That's when they meet. Well, that's it.